This is a segment from the Ed Templeton interview. The full episode is available on our Patreon. Enjoy.
It's just fun. It's just fun to look back. Someone like, you know, Jamie Thomas came up to me at the opening and said, thank you. Which is kind of unlike him to be that introspective, I suppose. But he was just like, thank you. And I was kind of like, for what? And he's just like, you captured the in-between moments. He's like, we're, as pro skaters, we're like always getting our portrait taken. We're getting our skateboarding shot and we're filming and doing all that kind of stuff. Siren.
All good.
But he was saying that he didn't recall. His experience going through the show was a trip back for him to a part that he almost didn't remember. Because it's easy for someone like him to remember. He can look back through his lookbook and see all the skate photos in the magazines, watch his video parts and stuff like that. But he's not necessarily being transported back to that 15-hour drive through Texas, you know, where he was just bored and looking out the window. Those are the kind of shots I ended up having. And so that's what he was so thankful for, that he was transported back to a certain, like a real nitty gritty, like, oh, this really made me remember those trips in a different way. Because, you know, like most things in life, you just remember the highlights. But a lot of this show is kind of like the lowlights in a lot of ways. This isn't the glorious part where everyone's, you know, pulling off an incredible trick or looking great for a portrait for the Trans World magazine or something. It was just the shitty time when you're just bummed on the tour, in the tour van. And so there's that looking back, as far as that goes, is fun. I go through phases looking back. So when you're installing a show like this, the photographs just become shapes, like a puzzle. And I don't see them anymore. I just am like trying to figure out. It's like in an abstract, I know what they are because I'm trying to like tell a story in the rooms. But it's like you detach from it. And so I'm just like, it's just shapes. I'm just trying to get this shape wall to look good. And this is a grouping of this theme or whatever. And then there's always that moment after it gets up and everyone leaves the museum and you're just like, me and Dan are just walking around and it hits you like, oh, I built this. Because there's a phase where it's just like, it's just a piece of wood to be constructed. It's just an object. And then, yeah, when I get back, I'm able to like transfer my mind from installing a show brain to human being looking at this stuff. And it's my stuff, which is also weird because I've looked at them for so many years that they also just lose their meaning. But usually I'm able to muster a little bit of time to just kind of look at it and trip out. And yeah, and like, I guess like a viewer would be, it's just like, yeah, I trip out the same way, because also the other part of it is that it feels like a different lifetime ago. You know, I stopped really skating hard in 2012. So now we're already like 10 years past that, you know, past my pro skateboarding, quote unquote, pro skateboarding life. And I just feel like a different person. I mean, I just do, everything about my life is so different that I'm looking at these photos and it doesn't even feel like me. You know, I'm just kind of, yeah, I'm like a voyeur on my own life.
Yeah, I can't imagine, because when I look at photos from my life and my friend group, even just 5 years ago, so many things have changed on some like drop by drop kind of style that you don't really notice that it's changing as it's happening. And just 5 years go by, never mind, like, let's say 20, you know. And everything has changed pretty drastically. In terms of your photos, how did you first get into shooting photos? What was the initial inspiration where it became more of like, because, you know, especially nowadays, everybody shoots photos, but it's the difference between like, you know, shooting photos for fun and then shooting photos kind of like as an art form, as a craft, as a practice, as documentation, as storytelling, and as a thing that you're doing with like more purpose and intent. When did you start getting into that? And also, when you were shooting this, how conscious was this? Were you thinking like, okay, I'm documenting a time period of our lives that is significant, not just to myself, but to people around the world, and I'm going to have this archive? Or was it just you're in the van and you're living day by day, and then you're just getting what you're getting because it's, you know, day by day living?
All right, I'll do the first part first. So I think... like a lot of people, I had a camera, a film camera, of course, because it was before digital cameras. But as a tourist, you know, I would have a camera and just cruise around, sometimes a disposable, I think, but a lot of times just, I don't even remember what models they were, just like your simple, basic plastic point-and-shoot camera, and would shoot on trips and stuff like that, you know. Here we are at Niagara Falls, get a little photo to remember that or something like that. And, you know, it was a slow evolution. I kind of tell this story before where I just, like, I did end up seeing art books that inspired me. I talk about it on the text in there. I said I discovered these books, but, you know, it's always never that flip of a switch fast. It was kind of like a slow build of things. I'd already been painting and interested in painting, and I was doing exhibitions with Aaron Rose in New York, and yeah, Alleged Gallery in New York, and like starting in 93, I guess, 94. Same time I started Toy Machine, essentially. So all this stuff was happening in my life where I was starting Toy Machine, starting to exhibit paintings and stuff like that. But all those first shows were just painting shows. They weren't photo shows. But I was surrounded by a group of artists that were in that world. And, you know, I think I met Ari Markopoulos back in 94 at my show. I met Larry Clark. A ton of people that was around me. Obviously, I was surrounded by skateboarders. I mean, by photographers as a skateboarder, because their job was to shoot me for the magazine. So I was around these guys like Mickey Vukovic and O and Dave Swift, and Chris Ortiz was like the Orange County guy for Transworld. And so I was around those guys all the time, and I felt like it was, you know, in a way through osmosis, I just sort of absorbed. I remember asking Mickey Vukovic one day, who's like a legendary skate photographer for Transworld magazine back in the day. And he's still, like, up until recently, was, like, working with Tony Hawk at the Tony Hawk Foundation, putting skate parks around the world. Asked him what's aperture mean? What does shutter speed mean? And stuff like this. And he's, like, such the technical kind of guy that he sat me down and gave me the whole rundown of the camera. Like, here's what everything means and everything works. Like, so patient, nice. And to this day, like, I still think of that conversation as I'm walking around the streets, because it's just, like, that was my genesis of him telling me how this thing works. And so, you know, really, I think it was just a mixture of being around photographers. So I ended up thinking photographically in some ways. Even as a skateboarder, you're like, okay, what will look good in the magazine? You want to, like, you start thinking about it. I know this is going to be seen by people. So you start thinking about what will I do to make this photo cool as a collaboration with this photographer. But then it was really... Thomas Campbell was another artist friend who encouraged me to be a painter and was a photographer and was always shooting photos and influencing me on that level. He was going on this big surf trip and had these books that he wanted me to hold for him. So just by chance, he's just like, hey, I know you have a domestic life and you will take care of these books for me while I'm gone. I'm going to, like, he sold all his stuff and he's like going to Morocco to go on some, you know, weird vision quest of some type, surfing and painting murals and stuff like that in Morocco. And one of the books he gave me to hold was Larry Clark's Teenage Lust. And so that was really something that just hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, wow, this is incredible. These photos are gritty and sexy and weird and hardcore. And, like, I think, like, a lot of people, obviously not just me, but, I mean, even probably your generation, like, obviously saw Larry Clark and was interested in that just because it's so, you know, it's like the crack cocaine of photography, you know, in a way. It's, like, really potent. And so, yeah, I'm not immune to that. I was influenced by that. And for me, it was, like, the idea of what they were doing. I didn't feel like I was going to copy them at all. Someone like Nan Golden or Larry Clark, because I knew that my cast of characters was so different. So people might say, like, oh, you're just copying Larry Clark. It's like, how could I possibly copy Larry Clark? You know, it's like, here I am in, like, the 90s. This stuff that you're referencing was shot in the 70s or 60s even. And we just live in a different era. So the main idea was just shoot your friends, shoot the people around you, shoot your scene. So I think to get to the next part of your question is that Of course. To get to the next part of your question, all this stuff was kind of building to a realization that the world I got to live in was incredible. So that's what you were asking, like, did I have a feeling, like, right at the beginning there, once I had this epiphany, or if you will, look what I get to do. Like, I just kept thinking, like, who gets to do this? Who gets paid, literally paid, to do what they would be doing anyway? You know, I'm a 19, 20 year old kid getting paid to skateboard, getting paid to travel around with your friends and do whatever you want. That's like, I don't know. I think I had this realization, like, what we're doing is not different than what Led Zeppelin is doing. You know, they get to, like, do their art, and people are paying them and loving them, and they're celebrities doing what they want to do. We're in the same boat.
You had that knowledge or that realization.
I had that realization then, and so I thought, like, this is, you know, important, based on the fact that I saw these books that, you know, here's an example of, like, a celebrated book where people are, like, looking at a certain culture at a certain time. In Ann Golden's case, New York, the gay scene in New York, her friend group in New York at that certain period. You know, it's like, it was a time capsule. And so I really did think, like, it's funny because it's like, yeah, I don't know how to explain it. It's just, I guess I did. I really did see it like, this will be something someday, I think. You know, it's like, you don't know ever for sure. You're never sure. But I thought, I'm going to do this. And it, like I said, I was around people who lived in photography. A lot of my friends, like Christian Klein, shot for Power Edge Skate Mag. And we hung out all the time, and he was like a zine maker. So, like, the influence of these guys on me is just incredible. Someone like Christian Klein, Mickey Vukovic, all the skate photographers I was around were just such cool people that really shaped me as a kid who I knew nothing. I mean, I was just a total dork. just a kid who skated and had no clue about anything in the world. I was musically clueless until I met Deanna, who went to all these insane concerts before she met me. You know, she was like at these insane punk shows in LA all the time.
Like hardcore punk?
Hardcore punk. She was basically saw the Smiths in 85, saw, I can't even name all the punk bands you saw. I met her ditching school to go see a Red Hot Chili Pepper concert in 86. But, you know, she opened my world, my world, gave, influenced me to all this stuff. And then when it came to photography and all this stuff, yeah, it just, like, Thomas Campbell giving these books and saying, check this out, hold this for me, it just imprinted on me so much. Yeah. So I just had that feeling, like, this will be something someday. Now, the other side of it is that I had no idea how long I was going to last. Your skate careers are not necessarily that long. I'm super lucky to have grown up in an era and turned pro in an era where it was softer on the knees and stuff like that. You know, we were turning pro in 1990. People weren't jumping down huge stairs and stuff like that. So by the time that happened, I was already, like, older, and I'm not known as a gap dude or anything like that. So I did rails and stuff, but I wasn't, like, jumping down a lot of stuff. And so, you know, I was able to, like, almost kind of span two different generations, like my generation from the 1990. But then also I felt like I had almost like a second coming or something in 94, 95 or 90, yeah, 96, 97 or whatever around there. And so in a way, this project that I was working on never stopped. It just kept going the whole time. I never knew when it would end. And only until I broke my leg in 2012 did I go, okay, this is it, I guess. This is, like, probably the end. I should probably, like, start working on getting this stuff together now, which is in itself a whole process. But, yeah, I think I answered the question for the most part.
How do you think your approach to shooting photos has changed? My friend pointed out to me something that I definitely wouldn't have noticed by myself, is that there's, like, you do self-portraits in your work, which I guess is not as common of a thing. How did that start? And then, yeah, I guess from the start of you shooting photos, which is kind of like shooting of your friends, and from the influence of the people that you got influenced by to now, has it changed drastically? Or do you still think you're just basically doing, like, the showing of parts of your life?
Yeah, for sure. There's been an evolution in the way I shoot, the way I approach it. Definitely. I shoot way more now than I did back then, because I was primarily focused on wanting to shoot the people around me. Although the fact that I was getting to be on tour in a place put me in these incredible locations to shoot street photography. So I, you know, right from the beginning, I branched off of shooting skaters, because it's like, that was a given in a way. It's like, that's what was my life. I was, my job was skate, you know, being a skateboarder, going on skate tours, doing demos, doing contests, etc. That was my job. So that took me to these places that was able to put me in interesting places to shoot street photos. So I was like simultaneously shooting skate culture and street photos wherever I was. That branched off pretty quick. So I was right from the beginning working on multiple series, although I don't know if I really, aside from the fact that I wanted to shoot skaters, I don't really think that I pre-planned shooting all the different series I ended up doing, even Teenage Smokers, which is a series I did, wasn't even my idea. I told this before, but Aaron Rose was looking at my photos and said, man, you shoot a lot of teenage smokers, maybe you should just like lump that into a group. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. So like, it wasn't even me coming up with that idea. It was like someone else noticing, like, oh, you do a lot of this, to do that. So a lot of the series kind of come organically over the years. You just start doing something, and then as you're doing it, you kind of like notice your own trends in looking at your own work. I mean, tons of photography is archiving. I have friends who who shoot a lot and don't archive and don't spend a lot of time. They are so obsessed with shooting that they don't spend any time processing it and organizing it. And I've always been pretty good at doing both. Like, I shoot, but then I go back and look, even every night. I mean, every night before I go to bed, I just open a folder and look through stuff, look through photographs. And it's like, there's a constant sorting sort of in your head, and like pruning of the tree in a way, putting different photos in different baskets and in folders and coming up with ideas. I have like 6 or 7 layouts of future book ideas open currently, like, and constantly moving stuff around just for when I get to that spot where I'm like, oh, you know what, I'm gonna like put all the effort to this project. It's already like, there's a huge head start. I've already spent tons of hours organizing it and editing it and stuff like that. So that's one thing. But back to your question, shooting, it changed a lot, because I would go on these, looking through the stuff for this book, even collecting stuff, I would be like, this whole tour, I only had like 5 proof sheets or something. It hit me like, I barely was shooting, you know? Yeah. I'm driving the van, I'm doing the demo, checking into the hotel. It's like, I didn't have a lot of time to shoot. I was the guy who had to like get us there on time and talk to the shop guy and get the money, and like, you know, every night get 6 or 7 hotel rooms and for all the guys and stuff like that. So in a way my shooting was like limited.
Yeah,
I'd be on tour, like even the last like 2012 tour, but when before I broke my leg, I went on tour with Jerry Sue, and we were in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm doing this demo, and I look over and I see Jerry Sue shooting photos on the side. I'm like, what the fuck? And I got so jealous, because I'm like, this guy, you know, he was like more of the kind of guy who was like, oh, I don't feel this spot, I'm not going to skate this demo. I was always like more of a workhorse, and like, I don't know what, I was just like a good little boy or whatever. Like, I would just do the demo. That's your job. Go do the demo. Even if the course sucks and the kids are lame or whatever, I would just do it. So I remember getting jealous, because I was like, he's shooting photos of all these cool kids and I'm sitting here skating. Like, I was bummed about that, but so my shooting has changed a lot in that. Like, I think I shoot a lot more now. Maybe also I just see more now. I think as you get older, the connections sort of, you know, imagine like one of those cork boards with all the photographs, like you're solving a crime with thread going from each. Like, those things just increase as you get older, because my knowledge of religion and how the world works just makes everything I see a potential metaphor for a photograph. So there's more things to shoot, there's more,
feel like a connection with everything,
kind of. It's like there's just more things that, yeah, make a good photo to me. Like, as as I've noticed that as I get older, like, it just expands. There's more things I'm interested in. I might have been like uninterested in landscape, for instance, like when I was younger. I was like, who cares about that stupid old building or something like that. And I'm more in the mindset now of like, oh, if you see it and you think it's interesting, shoot it. And, you know, even if I'm still not that interested in landscape, it's like, I'm going to shoot that anyway. So I just find myself shooting more as far as the style change. Different formats have changed. Obviously, I try to shoot medium format stuff more. And
why do you stick to that? And how has your process been, I guess, embracing or not embracing digital and iPhone, like Jerry Hsu did?
I just listened to his last night.
Oh, word?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did the books with the phones, which I personally really liked. And I'm kind of a phone hater to an extent. You know what I mean? I try not to be, and I try to embrace. And, you know, I obviously see the positives in it as well. But even just being the age that I am, and I'm just like, damn, that's fucking crazy. This is, like, really doing things. Anyways.
No, there's value in that. And I really agreed with a lot of what Jerry said about this subject, actually. So any listeners should go check out the Jerry Hsu episode about this, because it's really, he's got some great insights about that. I agree. I think that the phone is a cancer to me. I see it as a cancer. It's really bad. I'm addicted to it just like everyone else. I spend way too much time on Instagram and way too much time on Threads and whatever, and like reading stuff and thinking that I'm informing myself about stuff. But really, when you're done doing it, that's just gone. That time is gone. You did nothing. You did nothing. Yeah. Like, you did nothing. You maybe learned a couple of random things that you didn't know, but really you wasted your time. That time could have been spent watching a movie, reading a book, working on a drawing, whatever. Anything else would have been probably more constructive than looking at the internet or social media, especially. That's my core opinion right there. But it, like, having said that, I'm like everyone else. I do it. I post. I've come to disassociate from Instagram now. There was a period when, like, right whenever, I mean, if you've been on Threads, everyone loves to complain about my follower count, my engagement and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, I'm definitely from a generation way before that. So, and I got caught up in it. And there might have been a period when I was like complaining to Deanna, like, how do I have 250,000 followers and like 500 people like this post? It just doesn't make mathematical sense. But then the last thing I wanted to be was like one of those babies crying about that stuff, because I don't care. I realize like I don't really care. It's like, so I've just dissociated. I just like post once or twice a week now, or if something fun happens, and it just is like out into the, you just push it out in the world and forget about it. Don't think about likes. Don't think about engagement. I don't like, you know, it's a great tool. Like Jerry said, it's a great tool to get the word out. It's the only tool I have right now, unless I should be building a mailing list or something, but I'm too lazy to do that kind of stuff. So it's like the only thing I have is to get the word out about a show. Yeah. Like I'm doing something, and I've always been like there's so many people who are like, I don't want to promote myself, or I hate self-promotion. It's like, what is the whole point of Instagram? Like if someone's following me, like the reason they're following me is to find out if I'm doing a book signing or doing a show or doing something, so they can know. Like that's anyone I follow, I would be hopeful that they would tell me when they're doing a show. That's how I would find out, and I want to see it. So self-promotion is like, that's what Instagram is for, is just saying, hey, everybody, here's a little peek into my life once in a while. But mostly I have something that you might be interested in seeing going on, or also to boost friends. It's like I have, by the grace of being a skateboarder and whatnot and doing it for so long, I have that following. You know, when I know there's a bunch of cool kids who work at the museum here who have a little photo collective, they have a darkroom space and they do these little shows and stuff, and they all have, you know, not that many followers. So like, I'm always like, give me your flyers. I'm going to boost it on my Instagram so more people can get stoked on what you're doing. Like, that's the greatest thing ever, to be able to like, boost people.
Yeah, you become trapped in the algorithm. You become trapped in the algorithm, and it sucks because especially for artists trying to show their stuff, it's kind of crazy. Where do you think the future of photography lay with the changing of the tools that make it, and also the changing of the ways that we view art with the invention of social media and the decreasing attention span because of just the amount of content that there is, you know what I mean? Where do you think that that's going?
Gosh, I guess if I knew, I'd be rich. I don't know. I think it's one of those things that we as a people are going to have to just adjust to. But I don't think anything changes. Like, I always think back to the core idea, whatever, the core principle is just work. It just boils down to work. That's how I see it, at least. I sit here thinking, like, just do the work. And so the social media is a whole separate part of that.
Yeah.
But it's all built on the work, you know? It's like, you don't have the work, you don't have anything to share. I think people get so caught up in the sharing of it that they don't even do the work part of it. You know, I sit there just doing the work. I just want to, yeah. So I don't know. It's like, I don't know where it goes. Obviously, we've all seen people get insane follower accounts and leverage that into careers. You see it with stand-up comedy or whatever. I mean, actors, whoever, like, people have become superstars based on social media, which is incredible. And I think that probably happens in art to some extent too. And so, yeah, I can't help as a 51-year-old who's not on TikTok, for instance, sometimes wondering, like, am I missing something? Am I blowing it? I've seen this new thing where people are copying. Like, an author will come out with a book that becomes a bestseller, and then AI basically creates a fake one and puts it up there. So when people are searching for the book, they see this fake one. That's incredible to me. That's scary. You know, that kind of stuff is scary. It's like, is there like a fake Ed Templeton on TikTok right now who suddenly is having like a million followers and it's all AI versions of my art or something? I don't know. Yeah. But those are the things that we're just going to, like, there's always going to be people who get chewed by the machine.
Yeah.
Because this is what I'm trying to say. But for me, I just like try to like forget it and just do the work. Because, like, you know, yeah. I like the idea of, like, I'm sitting in my garage while it's a beautiful sunny day out and I'm just criddled in front of a painting doing little strokes. That's like, that's the work, you know?
Yeah. Me and like my group of friends, sometimes we feel like, damn, like, you know, the things that we love, whether it be skateboarding or graffiti writing or art or taking photos or any of that stuff, we're like, damn, this has kind of been cycled through a few times to the point where a lot of ideas have already been done. And then we'll have that thought process. But with what you're saying and just like kind of focusing on doing the work, it reminds me of this quote. And it was like, it's a famous quote and I'm probably going to butcher it, but it's like, there's only like five tastes or whatever, but the combination of all the five tastes makes more taste than you could ever, your tongue could ever taste. Or there's only a few basic primary colors. The combination of all the primary colors makes more colors than your eyes could ever see. And there's only two approaches to a thing, the orthodox and the unorthodox, but the combination of both creates infinite approaches. And
sure,
I think the same thing can be said for everything, photography included, and any type of art included. Like, if you believe that there is ingenuity in the human spirit and there are things that you can do, then there's things that you can do. But if you believe that everything's been done, then yeah, for you, everything's been done.
Yeah, you just hit it. I mean, that's a great thing. Like, the whole everything's been done thing, I think a lot of people can be crippled by indecision based on that. Like, you think, what can I do? What can I do that's so different or anything of that? And that's one of the, you know, it's a double-edged sword with the internet being at our fingertips at all times. Everything possible is at your fingertips, anything you can think of. And so, yes, everything's done. But just like you said, I mean, just like me finding Larry Clark and Nan Golden and, you know, essentially copying them, knowing that I'm not copying them. I can't possibly copy them, you know. One is I'm not as good as them. Two, I live in a different time. I have a different cast of characters. So even if I'm doing their exact same principle, it's going to be totally different. It's not, no one's going to look at this and say, they might see echoes of it, which I'm fine with. I love the idea of being in people seeing this and thinking, seeing some Nan Golden or some Larry Clark in there. That's a compliment to me, you know, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to go shoot the same thing. Well, a little bird just came up and landed on your camera.
What do you think?
Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
No, but I was saying, like, so being crippled by indecision is what I was trying to get to with that. It's so easy to, with all the knowledge, you know, that everything has been done, and people just get, you just turn into like a zombie almost. Like, I don't know what to do because everything, you can't, yeah. And so what you were saying is like essentially doing the work and the combination, that's great. Like that, I want to look up that quote, the combination of tastes. Because it is true. It's like no matter what you do, like and like me, my example with Larry Clark and Ann Golden is that everything you do is going to be uniquely your own. And as young artists, you need to, I think it's fine to like completely dive into copying somebody to a point. But then if you don't evolve, that's the whole key, I guess, is evolution. Because my first art show in New York, you know, I remember being crushed because some guy walked in and looked, glanced at it for 1 second and went, oh, this is like Egon Schiele ripoff. And he just walked out. And it probably stung because I knew there was a nugget of truth in there. Like I was super into Egon Schiele and like my portraits had a little energy like that. And like, but that pushed me to like evolve out of that. You know, it's like, yes, there it's there, but I kept laying down painting after painting and it changed, you know, and it evolved to something. And so, yeah, I guess maybe if someone might have been crippled by that and stopped painting or been crushed by it or whatever, you know, I guess I've always had another friend of mine. I remember, sorry. Another friend of mine one time, Mike Burnett, we were on a skate tour and I think he was in reference to like me putting out zines and doing paintings and stuff a little earlier on, was like, how do you have the confidence to like think that your stuff is worthy to be even seen, like to put it out there on the chopping block like that? Like, you know, and in that I almost sense like a vague, like, your work is so shitty, like how do you have the confidence to do that? I don't think he meant it that way, but I kind of sense it that way. And I was just like, yeah. And I was like, I don't know. I think it ultimately ends up being a trust in yourself. I like to think that whatever formed me as a child, whatever shitty childhood I had with my nuclear family and finding skateboarding and the characters that shaped me from that, and the music and the books you read, that's what my book Deformer was about. It's about being deformed into the person you are, shaped by your environment. Those things that shaped me have put me in this spot now. And so I guess I feel so confident that the stuff that formed me is interesting, I guess, that it gives me the confidence to just put stuff out there. It's a trust in myself, because I'm like in doubt like anyone else. I'm constantly looking at something I'm doing halfway through and going, is this stupid? You know, like, is this idea totally dumb and why am I doing this? Like, and so that's an example of being crippled by what's out there. There's so much out there. There's so much good and bad and so much to see that you could just be crippled and so I don't know. Maybe it's delusion. There's a delusion there. That's like, maybe I have that like little delusion switch where you're just like, I don't see the criticism and I just keep plugging forward. But
yeah. But forward, moving forward at all times.
Try to just keep moving forward. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Do it. I have so many platforms, you know, to work with that. I think I'm actually referencing another podcast you had, and I don't know if it was with Jerry or something. I listened to one of your other ones about someone who was saying they were getting bored by doing the same thing for so long. And I remember thinking in response to that idea that I'm so lucky to have Toy Machine and photography and painting to switch back and forth from. So I don't feel like I ever get bored in one thing, you know. I'll go into like a deep painting phase and then a deep photo phase. I just did a deep photo phase organizing this show and doing all this stuff for this and like getting everything, making the book and everything. And now I feel free from this, almost like wires crossed, is just out here in the world. And it's like, I don't have to worry about it anymore. And I've been painting this whole, like all this year I'll be painting because I have a show in November in Belgium.
Oh, cool.
And it's going to be mostly paintings. There's going to be some photos in it, but paintings, and I'm slow at painting. So like my whole year is like set. I'm just like, I'm painting all year to try to get paintings done for this show.
You're making paintings, you're shooting photos, and you're doing all this stuff, and you're kind of like looking at, in a weird way, like you're looking at the human condition. And you're also like saying things with all the things that you do, including the toy machine drawings. Something I wanted to talk about was skateboarding and how in skateboarding, an experience that probably anyone who grew up skateboarding has had is like there was a glorification, or maybe it's even just a documentation that comes off as glorification of like a sex, drugs, and rock and roll style of life. And like some of my closest friends, maybe because of skating or maybe not or whatever, but just like our idols and stuff, you know, we want to emulate them and we want to do what they're doing and stuff like that. So you end up drinking, and in the moment it feels very natural and it feels actually very accepted because this is what everybody's doing. And also it's in the video, and also not just this in the video, but the people in the video are also successful and what I would aspire to be. So basically you were also documenting this naturally because it's what's going on around you. What do you think about that? And especially as someone who, it seems like, you were kind of not really using drugs like that.
Never.
And, you know, you're like seeing it go down and it happens within skateboarding. So what do you think about that part?
Yeah, this is really interesting. A lot of those guys were failing upwards in a lot of ways. I mean, there's interviews at the back of Wires Crossed with Eric Ellington, Alyssa Steamer, Justin Regan, and Brian Anderson. And all four of them are now sober. And when asked the question, when you see these photographs, what do you think of? And all of them were basically like, what the fuck was I doing? It was a pile back then, you know? So they personally wish they didn't do it, because they're all sober now. I don't know if they wish they didn't do it. I'm sure they had fun, but you know, they've sort of like learned with some age that that's not what they want to do for their whole life. And they got out of it. They're all sober now. Reynolds is sober. A lot of these guys were able to do that stuff because they were in a network that enabled them. I mean, like I said, you're a pro skater, your talent on a skateboard supersedes everything. And so the companies in a lot of ways don't care. They're just getting your footage. As long as you're producing footage and getting video and photos, then do whatever you want.